Okay, we are recording. Okay, thank you, Rebezra. Okay, nice to see everybody. I look forward to this every week, getting a chance to see everybody. Mirz Hashem, one day we'll be back together in person. Okay. Okay, this week's shiur is on a fun topic. So we're talking about medicine, which is a refuah segulis. So it's a supernatural medicine. Maybe in today's language we would call it an alternative medicine. So maybe perhaps we can compare it to medicines of the Far East. Maybe we can compare it to homeopaths, or maybe we can compare it to acupuncture. So these alternative kinds of medicine, which sometimes work, some people swear by it. Other people say it's quack, it's quackery. Right, so the question is it a real medicine or not? Is it recognized by halacha? So someone might even wonder if we're allowed to do alternative medicine, medicine that has an element of superstition to it, or metaphysicality to it. There's even a question if we're allowed to do such medication. But let's talk about how it's recognized in halacha, and particularly if it's doiche Shabbos, if you can be doiche isurim, if we consider it to be like the expression of the poskim, do we consider it to be a refuah biduka? Is it really considered to be a medicine that it's subject to all the halachas of pikuach nefesh? So I brought an example from the Gemara in Shabbos, and that's how this topic comes up, because we're doing it basically topics that come up in the Daf Yomi. So here's like a far out example of a refuah that the Gemara says you're allowed to do, and the Gemara says that it works. So here we go. So in item Aleph, I quoted a Gemara in Shabbos. It's Samach Vav Amid Beis. There are many such Gemaras. Omer Abaye. So Abaye says, Omer Li Aim. My mother told me. Actually, Abaye didn't have a mother. His mother passed away in childbirth. So Abaye's mother was really like his nursemaid, the woman who raised him. So Abaye says, Omer Li Aim. My mother says, Le Eshta Bas Yoma. If a person has a daily recurring fever, so here's the refuah. Lishkol zuza chivara, he should take a shiny, newly minted coin. Belezo lemilchasa, he should go to, I guess you'd call it a salt mine. Beliskol miskale milcha, and he should measure out the same weight of the salt corresponding to the coin. So the coin was basically just a weight, and the salt will correspond to the weight of the coin. Beletzayre bechalola de beit savor, and he should take this salt, I guess he puts it into a little packet, and he should tie it to the hem of his neckline, benira barka, with a hair. So he has now, he uses a strand of hair to tie this bundle of salt that's the corresponding weight of a silver coin. He ties it to his neckline like a necklace. Ve'ilo, and that's supposed to cure the daily fever. Ve'ilo, and if not, if that's not available, or if he tried it and it didn't work, leisiv aparshas drachim, he should sit on the crossroads. Ve'chichazi shumshana gamla, if he finds a gigantic ant, the dori midi, that's carrying something, so sometimes the ant is carrying a leaf, sometimes the ant is carrying some kind of a load or a crumb, a piece of bread, Lishkale, he should grab the ant, Velashadye Begubsa Dinachasha, he should take the ant, put the ant into a copper tube, Velistamya Be'evra, and he should seal the tube with a piece of lead, that must have been the cover for these tubes in those days, Velachasmi Beshitin Gushpanki, and he should seal the tube with 60 different seals. So Rashi says that's an exaggeration. It doesn't have to specifically be 60 different seals, as long as it's sealed tightly and well. Vilevarzule, he should take this tube that contains the ant that was carrying the load, and he should shake the tube, vilidre, and he should raise the tube up and down, like almost like kaparis, like you wave it over your head, this tube of the ant. Vilemale, and he should, as if he's talking to the ant, tuunach olai, your burden, because the ant was carrying some kind of little piece of bread or whatever it was, your burden should be on me, utu'unai Allah, and my burden should be on you, right? So that was the incantation that you tell the ant. So this was al rafua biduka. Both of these rafuas, both of these medicines seem to have an element of superstition to it, or it seemed to be like a lachash, some kind of incantation, something metaphysical. It doesn't seem to work. I don't think this would be passed or approved by the FDA. This is something that's clearly something out of the ordinary metaphysical. So I wrote here, umuvan makel. This is self-understood. Shirafuazu enu inyan tivi. This is certainly not a natural medicine. Ela siguli. This is something that is supernatural. It's siguli. Umavur, and you see from the Gemara that at the very least, mutter la'asoso, it's permitted to engage in such practices. We don't consider it that you're dealing in voodoo or black magic or some kind of kishuf. We look at it like you're doing it's a medicine and you're allowed to do it. Abul yesh la'ayin, but the question is, im nechshav refuah biduka l'chalel olav es ha-shabbos, would a person be allowed to violate Shabbos? If this would entail some kind of violation, so far I don't think it entails any kind of violation because measuring the salt or even catching the ant wouldn't necessarily be a Shabbos violation. An ant is probably something that's not minoy notzud. It's not something that's usually caught. So this particular refuah probably wouldn't include any, wouldn't really be a Shabbos violation. But imagine if some kind of refuah of this nature would entail a Shabbos violation, or if this would require you to violate some kind of prohibition, would a person be allowed to do this if he was deathly ill? So imagine if the person has some kind of deathly ill fever, it's fatal. Would he be allowed to do a refuah of this nature, which seems to be supernatural? It's not clinically proven. It's not scientifically proven, I should say. Would he be allowed to violate any kind of negative commandment or even the Shabbos to perform such a refuah? So believe it or not, there's actually a discussion about this in a Mishnah in Yuma. There's a Mishnah in Yuma that says the following. Item base. This is a Mishnah in Yuma. Mi shenashchei kelev shoita. If a person was bitten by a rabid dog, see, even back then, it was recognized that being bitten by a rabid dog could be fatal. Ein machilin oso mechatzer kavet shalom. You're not allowed to feed the chole with the chatzer kavet of the rabid dog. The chatzer kavet, sometimes they translate it as the diaphragm, sometimes they translate it as the liver. It's probably a piece of muscle, the diaphragm, that's attached to the liver. So would you be allowed to feed the victim of this rabid dog bite with the liver, let's call it the liver of the rabid dog? So apparently there was a custom, there was a refuah back then to catch the dog. Like what we do is we try to catch the dog and we create like a vaccine out of the squirrel or whatever it is that has the rabies. But would you be allowed to catch the dog and then take some of its organs, the liver, let's call it, and eat the liver, which was considered a refuah back then? So the Chachamim say that ain machilin, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to because it's not kosher meat. It's a dog. A dog is a behemoth tmeya. It's not a kosher animal. Rav Masya ben Cheresh matir, but Rav Masya ben Cheresh permits it. Now the halacha follows the Chachamim that you're not allowed to. Now here's the key. The key is that we have to look into this Mishnah. What's the reasoning behind the Chachamim? Why do the Chachamim forbid you from eating the piece of meat of this non-kosher animal, this dog, which was considered to be a refuah? So look what Rashi says. So this person is deathly ill, even though the doctors were accustomed to feeding the victim with the liver of this rabid dog, ain refuah gemura, it's not a complete refuah. It's not totally proven that it works. It's not, the efficacy is not proven. It doesn't justify violating the Isser Daraisa of eating non-kosher dog meat for this refuah because it hasn't been proven conclusively that it's a refuah gemura. Rashi seems to say if we would know for a fact that this would be clinically proven that it would work, you'd be allowed to eat it because it's pikuach nefesh. The question is, it's not a refuah biduka. That's what Rashi says. Why does Rav Masi ben Cheresh permit it? Kisova Rafua Gemurahi. Because he says it is a documented, it is a bona fide Rafua, and therefore you're allowed to feed, like any other Pikuach Nefesh, you're allowed to feed the non-kosher meat to the Chayla in order to achieve a Rafua. So what do you see from Rashi? The Nechelku im Rafua Gemurahi, the argument here technically is simply, is it a bona fide Rafua? If it would be a bona fide Rafua, if it really would work, then the Chachamim would permit it. But since the Chachamim are not convinced that it works, it doesn't justify violating a prohibition in Isser Deraisa. Now, the Rambam has a completely different shot. The Rambam in the Pirish Mishnayis, so he doesn't write this in the Yad HaChazakah, the famous Rambam, he writes this in his commentary on the Mishnayis, the Zela Shonai. So I encoded the entire Rambam, it's kedai to see. Ein halacha k'rav Masi ben Cheresh, bazeh. So the Rambam also agrees that we do not paskin like Rav Masi ben Cheresh. You're not allowed to feed the victim the non-kosher dog meat. Shehu matir lahacha la'odom ha-kaved. That the Rambam, the Rav Masi ben Cheresh, permits feeding the victim with the liver of the dog, of the kelev shaita, with the rabid dog, kishenosha. Why? Ki zeh einu moel ela kederech skula. So says the Rambam in the Pirish Mishnayis, because this cure, the Rambam seems to agree that it seems to work, right? This refuah back then seemed to work. The person would eat the non-kosher meat, and it would seem to help his condition. It would lighten the condition. But says the Rambam, it's a derech skula. It's not something that we can explain how it works. It's something metaphysical. It's something like it's some kind of idea that if you eat the animal, the very animal that bit you, if you eat it, somehow it has some curative effect. We can't understand, or we can't demonstrate scientifically why such a thing would work. Why is the liver of this rabid dog better than any other meat? We can't explain it scientifically. It's derech segula. It seems to work, but it seems to be metaphysical. It seems to be unexplained. So the Rambam says, "V'chachamim soyrim ki ein oivrin ala mitzvis." You're only allowed to violate a mitzvah, elo refuah bilvad, only if it's a real refuah. How do you qualify a real refuah? If it works, it works. What's a loimar? Says the Rambam, bidvarim hamarapin biteva. It has to be something that cures naturally. It has to be something that we can explain scientifically why such a thing works. If you take the antibiotic, so the antibiotic kills the germs, and that's how it gets rid of the infection. It has to be that we can understand and explain scientifically why this refuah should work. But if it's only metaphysical in nature, it's not something we can explain, so it's not considered a refuah, says the Rambam. It's not beteva. Behudavar amiti. It has to be something that ratzaloyma bedvarm hamirapin beteva. It has to be a natural cure. Behudavar amiti. Something that is proven to be true. Hotziu hadas v'hanisoyin. Something that was experimented with, and there was a trial and error. It was clinically proven v'hanisoyin through experimenting. Hakarav le'emes, which basically proves that it's true. But to cure with something that only cures through a segula, some unexplained supernatural way, says the Rambam, it's asur. It's asur to violate. Why? If it would be kosher meat, it's kosher meat. Eat it. Why not? You don't have anything to lose by eating the kosher meat. If a rabid cow, right, would bite this person, so go ahead, shech the cow and eat its liver. Gesunte hates, right? No one's going to stop you. But over here, we're dealing with a non-kosher dog. So the clinical medicinal properties of the liver are not something that we can explain scientifically. Ki koicham cholosh, says the Rambam, that the power of this eating this liver is weak. Enu mitzad hadas, it's not something rational. V'nesyonoi rochok. And we've tested it, we've experimented with it, and we can't demonstrate that it really works. V'hitayna chalusha minatoya, and this is just a tayna chalusha. It's a very weak claim that it works. V'ze'ikr da'eyu v'zachreyu, this is the principle here. Take note of this, remember this, ki hu ikr gavol, because it's an ikr gavol. So the Rambam, it's almost in a way, that he's sort of like wavering back and forth. Does it work or does it not work, right? If the person eats this liver, does it work or not? Take a sample, take 100 people that were bit by a rabid dog and give some of them a placebo and give some of them the liver, and let's see if there's any indication that the liver really works. So the Rambam seems to almost dance around the issue. He seems to admit that it works, but since it can't be explained scientifically, it's derech sgula, it's not a refuah gemura, and therefore we can't violate a prohibition, we can't violate Shabbos, we can't even violate a negative commandment of eating a non-kosher animal. It doesn't justify violating. Now, the questions like...
So, Rav Masya, it had nothing to do with whether it was good, whether it could cure this thing or not. It's just that it was because it... Well, where did he get his thing from? That it was mutter.
Rav Masya disagrees. Rav Masya says, I don't care what it is. It works, right? If it works, it works. What's the difference?
How would he know it worked?
Because it was the accepted understanding. Like, how do we know that? That's a good question. So how do we know that antibiotics work? How do we know that any other medicine works, right? We know because that's the conventional wisdom. The conventional wisdom is that it works. Who knows? Maybe one day they'll come and prove that it does more harm than good and there's a better reform, right? But right now, we're allowed that the Torah gives rishus to doctors, varapo yurape, the Torah gives permission to doctors to cure, and therefore whatever the conventional wisdom is, you're allowed to rely on that for medicine, as wild or far-fetched as it sounds. If that's the conventional wisdom, you're allowed to rely on that. So Rav Masya ben Cheresh says, it seems to work, so give it to the chayla. But the Rabbanan say it doesn't, you can't give it to the chayla. Now, Rashi says because it's not a refuah gemura, it didn't pass the test of the FDA. It's not. Its efficacy has not been proven, and the Rambam sort of dances around it. He doesn't say that it doesn't work. The Rambam says it only works derech segula, and therefore such a refuah doesn't justify a violation. But Rav Masya ben Cheresh says, who cares? If it works, it works, and therefore you can violate like any other pikuach nefesh. Toby, is that good?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's move on. Dali. Now, this is a question. This is something that the Radbaz asks. Yes, go ahead. Yes.
The Ram lists it in Perish and Mishnais and not in the other Chazaka.
That's right.
Is there anything to from that?
So in the Yad HaChazaka, so he also paskins that you can't feed the dog, but the Pirish Mishnayis, he explains the reason. In the Yad HaChazaka, he doesn't explain the reason. In the Pirish Mishnayis, it's a commentary. So he explains the reason because it's Derech Refor.
Okay.
Now,
Rabbi Bear?
Yes? Oh, hi, Gidon. How are you?
Hi, good. Baruch Hashem. I think in Yad HaChazaka, he mentioned that we are allowed to, if the Yuma, the more Yuma you search for, we are allowed to do it, but even though it is not helping.
Okay, so you wouldn't be allowed to eat the meat because it's usher, but we're going to talk about, we're going to see other refuahs. If they don't involve a violation, you can do it, but according to the Rambam, you cannot commit a violation with these flimsy refuahs. Okay, now, here's the question, which I want to start off with this question, that Sarach Bir in Dalid, Ben al Rashi, Ben al Rambam. So again, let's keep in mind that there are two interpretations here, and we're going to come back to this. Rashi says the reason you can't feed the liver to the victim is because it hasn't been proven conclusively that it works. He calls it that it's not a refuah gemura. It's not a real refuah. That's according to Rashi. The Rambam doesn't say it doesn't work. The Rambam says it's derech segula, right? So we have to ask whether Rashi or the Rambam, either explanation, the halayafilu safik pikuach nefesh doicha Shabbos v'shari su. You're allowed to violate Shabbos even on a sfek sveka. So for example, imagine if a building collapses. So we don't even know if there's a Jew there or not. And even if there is a Jew, he might be dead already. He might be dead in a few minutes. By the time we dig him out, he might be dead. Nevertheless, you're allowed to violate Shabbos, and you can bring a machine, you can bring a bulldozer, and you can a crane, and you can lift up the rubble in order to find if on the chance that there's a Jew underneath that rubble. So you're allowed to almost do anything in order to possibly save a Jewish life. So why is it that you can't feed the person the liver, right? Rashi says It's not proven that it works. Okay, but is there a tzad that it works? Is it possible that it works? It might work. So let's give it to him. What do we lose? You're allowed to violate an iser even on a suffix. And according to the Rambam, what is the Rambam saying? That it's derech skula. It can't be explained why it works. So what? If it works, it works. Why can't we violate? Even on a suffix pikuach nefesh, we're allowed to be doicha Shabbos. So if there's a tzad that it works, why shouldn't we do it? And the Rambam is even mashmah that it could very likely work. But because it's a skula, we can't explain why it works scientifically. It works like on a different plane, so therefore we don't allow you to violate. What's the pshat? So there's a Radbaz. The Shaul and Chubas Radbaz, he actually has a separate section in his Sefer. It's a Chubas Sefer, but he has a separate section called Lashonois HaRambam. He explains the Rambam. So in Ois Kuf Nun Gimel, in section 153, the Radbaz himself explains. Afo pi dehetiru safik nefashis, even though we go so far to permit even a safik nefashis, hani mili bedavar sheru fasa yedua vada. It has to be a clear refuah. Why? The kiven the hadavar yedua shadavar zem moyel l'choyli zeh, because it's known, because it's established that this medicine or this activity, this action, will help for the choyla, machilin oisai, will feed him afilu shehacholi safik nefashis, even if it's a safik nefashis. The safik nefashis doicha, because even a doubtful safik nefashis, a doubtful pikuach nefesh, could be doicha. So let's say chas v'shalom, a building collapses. So is there someone there or not? We don't know. But you're allowed to do the malacha of clearing away the rubble, because even a suffix that it saves is doicha. Now, does clearing away the rubble and pulling out the victim from the rubble, from the demolished building, does it save the person's life? It most certainly does. So what we're doing is an activity that certainly has the potential to save a life. We're just not sure if there's really a life to be saved. Maybe there's nobody there, or maybe the person's dead already. But what we're doing certainly has potential to help. But a suffix trufa, but if the medicine itself is a suffix, if it works, so we're not even sure if we're being oisik, if we're involved in something that certainly works, you're not allowed to. So the Radbaz makes a distinction. If you're doing something that definitely could work, you're just not sure if it will work because maybe the person's dead already, or maybe the person is too advanced that it's not going to help. So then you're still allowed to do it. Safik nefashis is doicha. Safik nefashis is doicha. But safik refuah is not doicha, right? If the refuah is beduka, is clear, and the safik is because we're not sure, maybe we came too late, you're allowed to do the vadai refuah to save the safik nefashis. But if the medicine itself is a suffix, so it's a suffix trufa, a suffix medicine, that's not going to help. What's the reason, says the Radbaz? Because in Hayu Matirin, if we would permit even a suffix medicine, so then there's no limit. Ein l'davar soif. Hayu boyin l'chal shabbos bedvarim shloyu ilu v'loyatzilu kehevle hanoshim v'hatipshim. Because if we would go so far to say, let's try like grasping for straws. Let's try anything. Whatever might work, let's try anything. Even if it's not proven that such a thing is effective, let's do it anyway. But then Ein L'davar Soif, he says, you're going to end up violating Shabbos or any other prohibition for Havlei Noshim, even for nonsense, for old wives' tales, or for Tipshin, for nothing. Things that certainly don't work. So Chazal have the power, they have the authority to define the parameters of what we're allowed to do for pikuach nefesh. What are we allowed to violate? It has to have at least some semblance of a vadai. Something that's far-fetched does not have the power to be doicha, even though it might help, but there has to be some level of certainty that what we're doing is effective in order to justify violating a prohibition. And the Radbaz goes ahead and explains that that's also the pshat in the Rambam. Even though the Rambam doesn't say as clearly as Rashi that the liver of the rabid dog does not help, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say it doesn't help. The Rambam has a different perspective that it's a supernatural medicine. It's a medicine that we can't explain why it would work. Nevertheless, says the Radbaz, quote, Yesh l'taretz das haravzal, we can explain the Rambam as well. The Sfirale, the Rambam holds that a refuah segula is not a refuah klal, and it doesn't have the status even of a suffix refuah. It doesn't justify violating Shabbos or any other Isser Torah, like feeding non-kosher food to the victim. And again, the Rambam, the Radbaz explains that we're giving it the status of a suffix refuah. Rashi says it's not a refuah gemura, it's iffy, it might help, it might not help. The Rambam holds it's a refuah skula. The idea is that it's as if it has the status of a suffix refuah, or perhaps even less than that. And therefore you can't be doicha Shabbos. There has to be some line. We have to draw a line somewhere. It can't be that anything that has any far-fetched possibility of working, it justifies violating Shabbos or violating a halacha. There has to be that there's some certainty here. We have to be oisik in a refuah vadai, and then we can be doicha even for the purpose of safek nefashos. But if what we're dealing with is not even conclusive in the first place, then if it's a weekday, gzimtahet, if it doesn't involve an isur, gzimtahet, but you can't do something, you can't commit a violation for something that hasn't been proven. That's the Radbaz's explanation for both Rashi and the Rambam, that there has to be some level of certainty mitzad the refuah, mitzad the activity that you're doing, in order to justify violating. So Rashi says it's a suffix if it works. The Rambam doesn't even say that. The Rambam says that maybe it does work, but since we can't prove why it works, it's in a different class, it's a different category of medicine, it's not a regular medicine, and for such a thing, we don't allow a violation. Okay, now, the question is like this. The Mishnah says in Masechah Shabbos, so we were just discussing this before, the Mishnah says in Masechah Shabbos, Yoitzin bebeyas hachargol. So you have a chargol. A chargol is some kind of a locust. You're allowed to take the egg of the locust, ubeshein shul, and you're allowed to take the tooth of a fox, ubemismur men atzalav, and you're allowed to take a nail from the gallows. Mishum refuah, divir of meir. That's Rav Meir, and we paskin like that. Believe it or not, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. This is talking about doing these kinds of refuahs and wearing them outside on Shabbos, even in a Rishus Arabim, and it's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch. So there seems to be a dispute. Rashi says that the egg of the locust was for the purpose of an earache, and you actually would hang the egg on your ear. The tooth of the fox was for either the person keeps on falling asleep, drowsiness, or on the contrary, for insomnia. So he would, if it's a live fox, then the tooth has the ability to keep him awake, and the nail from the gallows has the ability to cure a swelling and infection. That's what the Mishnah says, and we even permit you to wear it outside on Shabbos. Now, the Pirush Mishnayos of the Rambam says, "Dekol hani mili merapin derech skula." So again, the Rambam says that all of these things cure, they have some kind of curative power, derech refuah. The hetiru, and they permit you, lehishtam shimbahem, to use them, says the Rambam. The imboi mishum darki amori, it's not considered the way of the goyim, it's not considered like a black magic or anything like that. You're allowed to do it, v'gam yoitzim behem b'shabbos, and you're even allowed to go out with it on Shabbos. So the achrayim ask, that the Rambam seems to contradict himself. Because on the one hand, the Rambam says that any refuah, derech skula, does not justify a violation. And over here, the Rambam says that you're allowed to do it and it's not a violation of derech amori because it seems to work. And second of all, you're allowed to wear it out on Shabbos. So the Achrayim answer, the Maram Chaviv, in the Tosfos Yom HaKippurim, it's a Sefer on Yuma, that afopid loyatiru litchay Shabbos isur deraisa mikoyat skulas. Although we don't permit you to violate an isur deraisa, but we do recognize that they seem to work, like the Rambam was saying all along, and therefore it's not considered doing something in the way of the goyim. It's not a kishuf, or it's not some kind of avodah zarah, or following arbitrarily in the ways of the goyim, because you're doing something that seems to work. Also, you can wear it outside on Shabbos. Why? Because since at the end of the day it seems to work, so therefore it is an accessory for the person. So this is a dakas tikkel. This is a fine distinction here. If there is an absolute violation, eating something non-kosher, violating Shabbos, so then the refuah segula does not justify a violation. But wearing something outside is not a clear violation. Wearing something outside depends. Is it a garment? Is it an accessory for the person? Or is it a tool? So if it works, if it helps the person, it's an accessory, like a garment. So it's not a violation. We're not violating, so we're not overriding a prohibition because of refuah segula. On the contrary, we're just saying that it's not considered carrying because it's considered a garment. So it works around the violation, right? It goes around the violation. It avoids the violation. It's not overriding a violation. So that's the chilek of the Maran Chaviv. That's why you're allowed to wear these mystical things outside, because you're not overriding a violation, you're avoiding a violation. Okay, so all of this was the Rambam so far. Now here's the Rashba. The Rashba in Chelek Dalet, Siman Resh Mem Hei, the Rashba argues on the Rambam. Says the Rashba, Yochel Adam Lotzeis Bekmeya B'Shabbos, one is allowed to go outside wearing an amulet, Ben Bitzavaro, Ben Bizro, that's a typo, whether you're wearing it around your neck or around your arm, Echad Choyle Sheish by Sakana, V'Echad Choyle Sheim by Sakana, whether it's a fatal condition or not, Kach Shemati Mipi HaRabbeinu Aron Zal. So says the Rashba in the name of the Ra'ah, that one is allowed to wear an amulet outside on Shabbos. It's really Mefurish in the Gemara. V'Oid Omar, now look at the Rashba. The Rashba says, first he says something that's very interesting. He says, Koisvin kol kameya afilu b'Shabbos, you're even allowed to write one of these mystical amulets on Shabbos, l'choy l'sheish by sakana, if the person is deathly ill, or l'yayedes, yoledes, or a woman in the pangs of childbirth, hecha de'inu tavi li'esuvei daite. This is very interesting. Imagine if a woman is in the middle of her labor pains, her contractions, and she's getting hysterical. And she's saying, I want you to write this amulet. I want you to write the amulet. So then, whether it works or not, the fact that she's getting hysterical is itself a sakana. So let's do whatever we need to do to calm her down. You want us to write the amulet? Fine, we'll write the amulet. Anything else you want us to do? Like, you want us to stand on our head? We'll stand on our head. It doesn't make a difference, because whatever is going to calm her down, that itself justifies violating the Shabbos. This is something that probably even the Rambam would agree with, because we're violating the Shabbos here not because we believe in the refuah, but simply because it's going to calm her down, and the chayla is getting hysterical. That itself is harming the person's health. Even if we're not convinced that it's going to work, but if it's going to calm the chayla down, that itself justifies doing that, and that the Rambam would probably agree to that as well. But here goes the Rashba. If the person's not asking for it, El Sha'omar Chacham Echa, but some wise person says, Yeshli Kimeya Echa Shemuel Oisocheli, that I happen to be aware that there's an amulet that would help, Efshir She'en Koisvin Oisocheli Shabbos Misafik, says the Rashba, it's very likely that we would not permit you to write it Misafik. That's because the Rashba holds that you can't violate Shabbos for a Safik Refuah, like we said in the Radbaz. However, unless the kmeya, the amulet, was proven, has a hamcha, it was proven, or that the gavra, the person who's claiming to write the amulet, has a reputation that his amulets work, then the halacha is, so the Rashba first says a nuance that if it's going to calm the person down, then whether it works or not will allow you to do it. It's irrelevant, because we're violating Shabbos not because of the value of the medicine. We're violating Shabbos simply to calm the person down. Just like you can turn the light on for the person, even if we don't need the light for his refuah, but if it's going to calm the person down, you can turn the light on for the chayla. But then the Rashba goes ahead and says that if we have a kameya, which is mulcha, which is established to work, it's been tried and tested, the Gemara goes through it, worked three times, or the scribe who wrote it has already proven himself as an expert in the Kameya world, so then he would be allowed to write the Kameya even on Shabbos. So in item tes, I summed up, it's Mavur Lehedya. We clearly see from here that the Rashba argues on the Rambam, and the Rashba holds that if you're sure that the Kameya works, even though the Kameya is clearly a metaphysical refuah, we can't explain scientifically why this incantation would work. You're not even writing psukkah necessarily. You're writing some gibberish. You're writing abracadabra on the Kameya. We can't explain why it would work. Nevertheless, the Rashba says that if it works, you can even do it on Shabbos. So the question is, how does the Rashba learn the Mishnah in Yuma? So Toby, how would the Rashba learn the Mishnah in Yuma? If you're allowed to violate Shabbos for the purpose of a segula, so why can't you feed the victim from the liver of the dog? So we have to say the Rashba holds like Rashi's pshat, because in that particular case, it was never proven that the liver works. But if you would have a case that's proven that it works, as outlandish as it sounds, as unreasonable as it sounds. Why in the world does writing abracadabra on a parchment, how does that possibly help the person? But if it's clinically proven that it works, you can violate Shabbos on account of that. So the Rashba clearly argues on the Rambam. Okay. We have a Machlekes Rambam and Rashba. Now there's a Birkei Yosef, which is written by the Chida. He brings a story of a Maisa Be'ish Echad. There's a story of an Ish Echad, of an individual. Now in this Shuva from the Chida, he doesn't even say who the Ish Echad is. So I know that it was Rav Shimon Sharabi, who was a very famous Kabbalist back a few hundred years ago. And the way I know that is from Rav Avadia Yosef. He tells us who this Kabbalist was. There's a story of an Ish Echad. He was Rav Shimon Sharabi, who was a Mekubal Meforsim. So he one time found a skula, that word should be safer, it's a typo, in a Ksav Yad from an Adam Gadol. He once found a skula in a safer from an Adam Gadol, from the Rishonim, that if somebody drinks poison by mistake, so sometimes Loyalenu, a child, drinks a Clorox, or some, he overdoses on a medication, some kind of poison, so you're allowed, so that you can write this Kmeya. So this Mekubal, Rav Sharabi, he discovered a Kmeya that as soon as you write this Kmeya, then the person will automatically regurgitate the poison and will become healthy. It'll start the healing process. And he did this many times. So one happened on Friday night that on B'Leil Shabbos Kodesh, there was once a little girl who by mistake drank poison. She drank some cleaning agent or some poison, whatever it was. They quickly sent to the Mekubal and taketh umiyad, without any hesitation whatsoever, he wrote the Kameya on Shabbos. And lo and behold, the Kameya helped. She threw up the medicine and she was cured. They asked the Chida, did this Mekubal, who turns out to be Rav Sharabi, who was a famous Mekubal, did he act properly, right? In retrospect, in hindsight, was he allowed to write this Kameya on Shabbos in order to save this girl? He's done this many times. He's proven himself. It's almost like we know that it'll work. But at the end of the day, was he allowed to write the Kameya on Shabbos in order to save this girl? So the Chida responds in item Yud Aleph. L'fum Riata, at first glance, lo shaper of it. He did not act properly. The Sfardim follow the Rambam. The Rambam says you can't be Doicha Shabbos because of Refuah Sigulis. You're not allowed to, right? It worked. He knows that it's going to work. At the end, the Rambam says it doesn't qualify, it doesn't justify violating Shabbos for Refuah Sigulis. The Chida does bring the Rashba. The Rashba says you are allowed to write a Kameya. We just read the Kshuva that he actually specifically says you can write a Kameya. But the Chida says that the Svardim have to paskin like Rabbeinu HaRambam. But then the Chida says something very interesting. He wants to defend this Mekubal. After all, he saved the girl's life. He wants to defend the Mekubal. Says the Chida, even according to the Rambam, it would seem that in hindsight, Lemafreya, in retrospect, he did not do a violation. Why? Because at the end of the day, it helped. Lemafreya, retroactively, it's almost like the Chida is saying, if you would have asked me ahead of time, would I permit you to write this command to save the girl who ingested the poison, I would have answered no. You're not allowed to write the Kameya. But this Mekubal, he didn't ask me. He went ahead and he wrote the Kameya, and the Kameya worked. So after the fact, he was not in any violation because it worked. Number two, says the Chida, Be'ofen sakana ein shoyalit, right? You're not even allowed to hesitate and ask a shayla. If you think that you're allowed to do it, right? Act first and ask questions later. So this Rav Sharabi, he didn't ask me. So in his mind, from his perspective, he acted properly. Even though if he would have known the Rambam, he would not have done it because the Rambam says you're not allowed to do it, even if it seems to work, but it doesn't fall under the purview of violating Shabbos. That's what the Rambam says. But number one, retroactively, he wasn't in violation. And number two, he didn't ask, right? He just acted. So when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, you're allowed to act. Now, so it seems, what's the explanation? How do we understand what the Chida said to defend this Kabbalist? If you're not allowed to do it, then he did a violation. How can you say that you weren't allowed to do it ahead of time, but in retrospect you didn't do a violation? If you're allowed to do it, do it. If you're not allowed to do it, then it's a violation. What does he mean that we decide afterwards if it's a violation? So the explanation, we can understand what the Chida is saying based on what we just quoted from the Radbaz. The Radbaz asked the question, what is the Rambam saying? If it works, it works. What difference does it make if it's Derach Skula or according to Rashi? It's a suffix if it works. But suffix pikuach nefesh v'doicha. What difference does it make if it's a suffix? So the Radbaz explained, because there's a certain boundaries, we have to draw the line somewhere. You can't just do any far-flung thing in the name of pikuach nefesh. It has to have some basis in reality. So says the Chida, the only reason why the Rambam would say you can't do it ahead of time is because it doesn't have enough grounds to be effective in halacha to justify violating. But if you did it and it worked, so then retroactively you had the heter pikuach nefesh. If you're coming to assess the situation ahead of time, there are rules what we give you the right to be doicha and what we don't give you the right to be doicha. But if at the end of the day it really worked, so then you had the heter of pikuach nefesh, this could be a possible understanding of what the Chida meant to say. In Sefer Yabia Oimer, so that's from Rav Avadi Yosef, he brings a fascinating Gemara in Maseches Sukkah. It's a famous Gemara. This is the Shir HaMalos Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan says that when David HaMelech was digging the foundations of the Mizbeach, he dug so deeply that he broke through the bedrock and he reached the Tahom. He reached the depths of the water of the earth, whatever that is. And these depths, these waters, threatened to sprout forth and drown the entire world. So David HaMelech says the following. Does anybody know if you're allowed to write Hashem's name on a piece of pottery and throw it into the raging depths? And by erasing Hashem's name in the water, it'll calm the waters down. So Achitofel, who was one of David's advisors, he made the following kavuchim. If you're allowed to erase Hashem's name to make peace between the husband and the wife, Parshas Naso, we just had it last week, that you're allowed to, 2 weeks ago, that you're allowed to erase Hashem's name in order to make peace between the sota, between the husband and the wife. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that even my name that was written, Bikadusha, should be erased for the purpose of the woman. So in order to make peace for the entire world, you can certainly erase Hashem's name. Achitofel immediately told David, you're allowed to write Hashem's name on the pottery and toss it into the raging waters that's threatening to flow, to overflow and flood the earth. So David HaMelech wrote Hashem's name on the pottery, he threw it into the water, and it calmed the water down. So Rav Avadia Yosef says a beautiful idea. He says, what was the question, right? Do whatever it takes. Write Hashem's name on the pottery, throw it in. Why is David even asking Achitofel, right? If you think it might work, do it. We're talking about destroying the world over here, right? If it might work, do it. So Rav Avadia Yosef says an interesting thing. He says, David HaMelech had the suffix, do we hold like, it's cute, it's like almost like a little bit like a drush. Do we hold like the Rashba, that anything that works you're allowed to do, even though it's metaphysical, because erasing Hashem's name into the water, we can't give any rational reason that would calm the water down, right? So David HaMelech says, do we hold like the Rashba, that you're allowed to do an Avera, even for some kind of metaphysical refuah, or do we hold like the Rambam, that we have boundaries, our hands are tied, and that we're not allowed, it doesn't justify a violation. So even if the whole world is at stake, we simply can't violate the Avera of erasing Hashem's name. That was David HaMelech's suffix. So Achitofel made a kal v'chomer that you're allowed to erase Hashem's name in order to save the world, just like you can erase Hashem's name in order to save the woman, to permit her to her husband. Now, what was Achitofel answering? So according to the Rashba, the answer is a global answer that you're even allowed to violate any violation in order to save the world or any pikuach nefesh, because even though it's a metaphysical refuah. But according to the Rambam, you're not allowed to. So what was the answer? How is he allowed to erase Hashem's name? This is a special exception when it comes to the Avera of erasing Hashem's name. That's what we were saying. Even though you can't commit some other violation. You can't eat non-kosher meat. You can't write an amulet on Shabbos, whatever the violation is. You can't violate some other violation for a supernatural refuah. But when it comes specifically to erasing Hashem's name, Hashem allows his name to be erased in the name of peace. So therefore, it's a special exception in erasing Hashem's name. The Shara Ephraim has a question like this, and we'll finish up with this. The Shara Ephraim has a question that there's a nichbe, somebody who has, they translate this as epilepsy, a person who has like some kind of fainting spell where he could faint and fall off a cliff, right? So his fainting, or he can hit his head. So his fainting itself is sakonis nefashis. So the mumchim say, write something on a kmeya, on deer skin. Now the problem was, we weren't able to procure any deer skin. The only thing is that there happened to be a Sefer Torah that was written on deer skin. Would you be allowed to erase the Sefer Torah in order to have the deer skin and write the amulet on the deer skin to save this person from his fainting spell, from his epilepsy, from his seizures? So the Shara Ephraim says that you're allowed to erase the Sefer Torah for the purpose of the Kameh. But then the Shara Ephraim says, I'm not so sure, because it's different than the Gemara in Sukkah and the Gemara in Soita. What's the difference? Because over there, the salvation itself was the erasing of the name. In other words, the Torah says, when it comes to the Sota, erase the name into the water. That's exactly what the cure is. The cure is specifically to erase the name of Hashem into the water. Or Achitofel was telling David that the cure, to calm the waters, the raging waters, the cure is specifically to erase Hashem's name. Over here, the cure for this epilepsy had nothing to do with erasing Hashem's name. It just happened to be that we needed to erase Hashem's name in order to get our hands on this, on the deer skin, in order to write the amulet. It was the amulet that cures the epilepsy. It wasn't specifically the erasing of Hashem's name. So it would seem that this would depend on the Rambam and the Rashba. If you hold like the Rashba that you're allowed to violate any prohibition for a supernatural cure, then what difference does it make? You can even erase the Sefer Torah, even though that's not the actual cure. It's something peripheral that we need to do. It's collateral damage. We need to erase the Sefer Torah in order to get the deer skin, in order to create the amulet. But you can violate any prohibition to save somebody's life. But according to the Rambam, that you're not allowed to commit a violation with a supernatural refuah, it was a special exception when it comes to erasing Hashem's name, then there would be a makom to be mechalek. Then we can make this distinction. When does Hashem allow his name to be erased for a supernatural cure, if that itself is the cure, like the Sota, where you're erasing the name into the water, or you're calming the water by erasing Hashem's name into the water? But if the erasing of Hashem's name has nothing to do with the cure of the epilepsy, so then perhaps the Rambam would not allow you to erase Hashem's name. So basically, we can take the Rashba and the Rambam. We have a dispute whether supernatural cures justify a violation. Are they considered a certain enough refuah? Even assuming you're allowed to do it, would it justify a violation or not? The Rashba says that if it has some kind of level of certainty, you would be allowed to violate a prohibition. The Rambam says not, but the Rambam would admit that you can erase Hashem's name for the purpose of an amulet, or if that itself is the cure, because that's the Gemara in Sukkah. Like I said at the beginning, some of these refuahs could be homeopath. Some people swear by it, right? Other people say that it's a quack. It's a quack homeopath, or maybe Far East medication. There's this whole science of like somehow channeling the energies through the person's body. All of these kinds of refuahs. Maybe the Rashba would say you're allowed to do it, and you're allowed to violate even a prohibition on behalf of that. And the Rambam would certainly say you're not allowed to. So the Rambam, the Rashba, and the Ramban, and the Ra'ah all permit it. So therefore, halacha l'maisa, if you're an Ashkenazi, not a Sephardi, like the Chida says, you would be allowed to violate Shabbos, even for the purpose of these other kinds of refuahs, as long as they work with some level of certainty. Okay, Yasha Koyach, everybody.
So, Rabbi,
we're
yes. Once again, yes.
You used you.